Welcome back to Oysters, Clams and Cockles, presented by Bolin Media. I am Ross Bolin, here with Barrett Dudley, and we are just 40 days away from the premiere of House of the Dragon Season 2, Barrett. 40 days. The countdown has begun.
Wow.
Leading up to the June 16th premiere of House of the Dragon Season 2, the first week in June, we will be dropping a Season 1 recap podcast to remind us all what the hell is going on in Westeros, since it's been almost two full years since we were there. And then the second week in June, we'll be dropping a trailer breakdown podcast, kind of predicting what we think will unfold in Season 2.
Ha 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 ha. Who is that? Which rapper is that? I can't remember.
I can't either.
That's all very exciting, Ross. Have you begun a rewatch of House of the Dragon?
I have not.
No? Okay.
It's a daunting task, to be frank. I feel like I have to do it, though, and I will. It's like 40 days is more than enough time for me to...
Well, but 40 days until the Season 2 premiere. You got to be ready for that. You got to be ready for the Season 1 recap.
Okay, so yeah, like more probably like 27 days or something.
Yeah, something like that. 20, yeah, yeah.
I'll be fine.
Yeah.
I'll be fine.
I think I'm gonna be real with you. I feel like you could skip the first half of the season a little bit.
And just watch the back half?
And just watch the back half, because there's the huge time jump, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like... I don't know. It's like, that first half of the first season felt very relative to the second half of the first season, but how relative is it going to be to the second season?
That's a good question.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no. I mean, I feel like I have to be fully engulfed.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I'm going to go all in.
Okay.
But like I said a few weeks ago, whenever that was that we talked about it, I think you could get away with watching a short YouTube, breakdown of Season 1, and you would be fine.
Yeah.
You would be fine. But we're going to do some type of a recap
for sure.
To help out our listenership.
And you can probably just fast forward through, like, the birthing scenes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Not to mention that'll cut down, like, what, 4 or 5 hours?
At least, the viewing experience.
So.
A good half of the season. Yeah. And between now and our House of the Dragon Season 2 coverage beginning, we'll be discussing some other random things we've watched and or are watching in one-off podcasts like today's, where we are going to talk about Netflix's Three-Body Problem. Not the one, not the two.
That's the thing about it.
The three-body
problem. There's three bodies.
There are three of them. You want to get into this thing, Barrett?
Let's get into it.
Because I just watched, speaking of YouTube recaps, I just watched a 13-minute recap of Season 1, because it was several weeks ago when I finished this thing.
Yes, yeah, you burned through this thing.
And this show was absolutely batshit insane. This season is so complicated. There was so much crap that happened. Obviously, this is created by Benioff and Weiss.
Yeah.
Benioff and D.B. Weiss of Game of Thrones fame and infamy, I suppose. And then Alexander Wu is their third creator. I'm not exactly sure who that is, but it's 8 episodes, right? Came out like, what, a couple months ago at this point?
Yeah.
And yeah, if you thought like A Song of Fire and Ice was difficult to adapt to television, this book series, which Barrett has read at least some of,
is infinitely
more complicated and science-based and absurd and convoluted at points. So first off, where are you in the book reading journey?
So I am about 100 pages into the third book.
Damn.
So
you've read the first two.
So I've read the first two.
How many books are there total?
There are three books in the original trilogy written by Xi Jin Liu.
Okay.
And then there's a fourth one that another author wrote with like the blessing of Xi Jin Liu, which like dives more into some stuff and like talks about some aftermath and blah blah blah, but it's like not it's canon, but it's not like it's not required reading, basically. It's like it's an add-on. So there are three books. It's a trilogy. And it's pretty interesting what they did adaptation-wise, because like I came on this podcast and said, I was like, "Oh, there's all these characters in the adaptation that are not in the books."
Right.
Well, I was way off. These are the showrunners, you know, intelligently read all three books before adapting, as you probably should do. And the third book starts by jumping back. It goes backwards in time. Like you're kind of like you read the first one And the minor book spoilers here, but if you've watched the show, then a lot of stuff has been spoiled already, so it doesn't really matter. But the first one kind of begins in the same era that the show is taking place, which is like we are in whatever you want to call like modern time.
Okay.
And this threat is of the impending alien invasion is being brought to light, basically.
And it's 400 years away.
Okay. And the second one kind of like picks up and talks a little bit about this era, but goes deep into the future. And then the third book kind of like throws you back into what is considered what's called in the book the Crisis Era, and basically gives you characters I'm sorry, my phone is bugging the shit out of me. It gives you characters like Jin Chang, who almost keeps the same name in this show. It's like Jin Chang instead of Jin. It gives you the guy that Sir Davos, the Onion Knight, is playing, Wade. It gives you the character that's supposed to be the sick guy, Will Downing. It gives you that character. So there's it. For whatever reason, I don't know why yet, because I'm not there yet, but this piece of the story of the Crisis Era with these characters and this whole staircase project that you watch that you watch unfold, that's all from the first 100 pages of the third book.
Okay, that's wild.
That's part one of the third book. I just finished part one last night, actually.
Right, whereas season one, the TV show on Netflix, the Oxford Five, as they are known.
Yep.
And the characters you just named and the Staircase Project are the bulk of the season.
Kind of the bulk of the season.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's
and that's book three stuff.
And that's book three stuff. So that's pretty interesting. And it's also pretty like obviously we're gonna get to why we'll eventually get to why it was important to tell the story of these characters. And then the show did it changes a lot of things. Like most if not all of the characters in Three Body, the series, are Chinese or based around China. And so obviously Netflix, again, and Benioff and Weiss, I think, intelligently made this a more global story, brought in characters of all kind of like races and creeds and that type of thing, and kind of centered them as the Oxford Five. Whereas like that piece of it is all kind of like, you know, a show creation.
They're all Chinese in the books?
That's okay. Correct. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. Most characters.
Right.
There are some like Davos, the Wade character is actually American in the books.
Okay,
but not
in the show.
But not in the show.
Well, I guess
so.
Is he an American in the show? He just has an accent.
No, he's British.
Okay,
he's definitely British.
Okay, he's British.
But I thought the show. Look, it kind of sucks to be a book reader of stuff. Honestly,
of stuff that gets adapted.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, this is the problem I had with Game of Thrones.
Yeah, like you're stoked to see something brought to life on the screen, but at the same time, you're just sitting there watching, like comparing it to the books the entire time.
Yeah.
Being like, oh, I wonder how they're gonna do that. Oh, that's different. Oh, okay.
It kind of becomes a distraction from the TV show.
It absolutely is. It's hard to kind of like it's really hard to critique the show. It's really hard to like make a statement or say how you think they did from a TV show perspective, because you have the other thing to
this pre-existing story.
You have the pre-existing. So really, I'm quite curious to see kind of like how you would have graded the season overall, or kind of what you thought of the story and just like where your head's at with it.
Yeah, let's walk through some of what happens, and then at the end of our discussion, I'll kind of give you my ruling on what I thought of this thing, of season one of this thing. The show starts out in 1960s China, right? We're shown this is like, there's like some kind of revolution taking place. The party that's in power.
Yeah, it's the Chinese Cultural Revolution we're watching. Yeah.
They're killing anybody who teaches science that is not approved by the governing party, right? So we watch this one scientist get beaten to death on a stage in front of a big crowd. And in that crowd is this woman who is the victim's daughter. And then that woman becomes a central, I guess, probably the most central figure in the show's present day timeline, which we jump to. We also spend time with her in the past because she grows up to be sort of a revolutionary in China. But she's still young. And the Chinese government, I suppose, realizes, like, oh, shit, we probably shouldn't have killed all the scientists. And they take her to this satellite communication center where they are trying to get in contact with aliens.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this is the same girl who watched her father be murdered at in the first scene of the show. I'm going to be jumping around here because is impossible not to. So that woman is at this satellite communication center, and I guess they're not really doing a whole lot up there. Like, there's not a lot of action occurring.
Mm-hmm.
And she decides, like, well, I'm going to start doing shit on my own. And she's trying to make contact with these aliens. She's sending messages or something, but nobody's messaging back. They're not getting any, they're not receiving any messages. They're just sending messages out into the universe, not getting anything back. And then one day, she's up there in the old satellite center by herself, and a message comes through from an alien. It's like, hey, I'm one of the aliens. You should really stop sending these messages. You're lucky you got me because I'm anti-invasion. But if any of the other aliens get word of you sending these messages out, they are totally going to invade Earth. And she basically walks away from that experience, thinks about it, and is like, you know what? Fuck human beings. We are not worthy of Earth and have mismanaged our stewardship, and the aliens should come and invade us. So she messages the aliens back anyway, setting off a chain of events that will cause Earth to be invaded in 400 years. So all of this is her fault.
Yeah, yep.
She is to blame, and her name is Ye. And we spend a lot of time on the show with her in both the past in China where she does this satellite nonsense, and then in the present where she's a much older woman who is the head of a cult. I guess she's one of the two heads of the cult that want the aliens to come and that are preparing for their arrival and that actually have consistent communication with the aliens now to do so, to prepare. It's fucking wild. And they really drag out that part. Like, you don't find out that this is all her fault for like a few episodes or whatever. And then you really, as a human, you're like, fuck this lady. What the hell? But yeah, so you've got her, Ye, right? Then in the present day, we've got particle accelerators, which almost none of the science side of this made any sense to my feeble mind. No idea what a particle accelerator is. No idea what nanofibers are, which we'll get to. But the particle accelerators, in present day, here's the point. All this scientific technology that we have been developing is suddenly going haywire. Particle accelerators are displaying nonsense results, and the scientists cannot figure out why. The world's top minds are baffled by the situation, right? And also, scientists are dropping dead left and right, usually by suicide or strange circumstances. And one scientist's suicide, Dr. Vera Ye, causes her best students, a group known as the Oxford Five, to come together and try to figure out what's happening. And it also turns out Dr. Vera Ye is the daughter of Ye, the woman who set off this entire situation. Now, one of the students is Augie. And one of the first big moments in the TV show is when you see that Augie has a countdown that's showing up in her field of vision, very annoyingly, I might add, and without reason, without explanation. She's just sees a countdown. It's bugging the hell out of her, Barrett.
Yeah.
She cannot stand it, right?
It's basically like when you've watched too much 24.
Yeah.
And all you can hear is the din, din. Din,
just without
din.
The sound.
Yeah.
So, like, things are really mysterious here in the first few episodes of the show. You're like, what the fuck is happening? Like, this weird woman, younger woman, comes and visits Augie, who is seeing the countdown, and, like, lights her cigarette and tells her, when the countdown reaches zero, you're going to die. And the only way to stop this countdown is by shutting down your nanofiber science company project, which she reluctantly ends up doing, right? After she's like, look, if you don't believe me, go out to this spot at midnight and look up at the stars. And so Augie does that with her boy, what's his name?
Saul.
And the stars blink in Morse code and it matches the numbers she's seeing in her field of vision.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh shit, this is legit. Gotta shut down the nanofiber project. We gotta stop it all immediately because I don't want to die. And so she does that, right? And then Augie is approached by this detective named Clarence, who sort of ends up being like the right-hand man of the head of the good guys, Thomas Wade. Thomas Wade is played by Davos Seaworth, a.k.a. Liam Cunningham. There's a whole bunch, like several Game of Thrones characters littered throughout this show.
Yeah.
The first one, the biggest one probably being Davos, but also Jack Rooney is played by John Bradley, who was Sam.
Sam.
In Game of Thrones. He doesn't make it long.
Does not.
But he is in the show for a few episodes. Anyway, they start trying to unravel what exactly is occurring here. Mommy Ye, the woman who caused all of this, tells one of the students, Jin, that her daughter was playing this strange video game a lot before she killed herself. And the video game is just this silver headset. No wires, no buttons, no cartridges, no power source. Obviously very futuristic, some sort of weird alien technology going on. Like, you kind of pick up on that from the beginning before they even reveal it. And this video game she was spending all this time playing before she killed herself, which draws Jin and Jack into playing that video game to try to, like, figure out what the hell it is.
Yeah.
It's basically super advanced virtual reality. You put this thing on your head, and then suddenly you're transported to this other world where you are given a problem to solve, which over the course of several very long scenes, in like several episodes, you eventually find out is the three-body problem.
Yeah.
That you're in this on this alien planet where there are three suns rotating around, or the planet's rotating around the three suns, but it causes chaos in terms of, like, weather, climate, you know, gravitational pull. There are all sort of... Anyway, the aliens have basically... this is my understanding. They sent this helmet to Earth to see if anybody could solve the situation on their planet, right? They keep building up their civilization, and then this three-body problem keeps wrecking it.
Yeah, so this is a piece of the book and a piece of the show that is not... It is not made explicitly clear, and I think both are a little worse off because of it. But what we're actually supposed to believe, or if you look this up and read people's thoughts on it, the real takeaway is that this technology was given to this group, this cult. They were given it by the communication with the Santi.
Santi, the basically. Aliens. That's what they're called, the Santi.
It can't have been sent by the Santi because, as we know, that would take 400 years because they're flying as fast as they fucking can, 10% of light speed or whatever, and that's going to take them 400 years.
Yeah, good point. And that was kind of a thing that kept coming up in the show because, like, somebody else gets a helmet delivered to them, and you're like, who's giving them these dang helmets? Are the aliens already here?
And they are already on their way. So the point is also not to is not to fix the problem necessarily. Although if you can fix the problem, it does make their world habitable for somebody. So.
But that was a weird element of this thing, because you spend a lot of time watching them play this video game.
Yeah.
And this is where the show almost lost me, because on like the third episode of this, I was like, okay, what the fuck are we doing here?
Yeah.
And frankly, by the end of the season, as you are now pointing out, I still didn't really know what the point of the video game was.
So the point of the video game is actually, it's a recruiting tool.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah.
They do explain that.
They do, and they actually explain it in the show more so than they do in the book. You kind of have to, there's some stuff that happens where that makes sense in the book too, but there's not that scene where, like, the alien fanatic? Yeah.
I can't remember her name, but...
Tassana?
She's a real nut.
Tamara? Tamana?
Tatiana,
thank you. I was circling around on it.
Samsonite.
There's not that scene where she's like sits down with them and she's like, "So, what do you say? Join the cause for these poor Santi?
You guys passed the test and got the invite. Right. Great job."
Yeah. There's not quite that level of connection to what it is that they're trying to do. But that's the point. They give these they're giving these video game helmets to super smart people, showing them what's happening on their world. Kind of conveying this idea that this is like an unfixable problem, and this is why these poor people, this poor civilization, has to come to the Earth now please won't you help out? Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So to gain sympathy and understanding.
Yes.
Got it.
Yep.
Unfortunately, Jack Rooney, Sam from Game of Thrones, is like, nope, I'm out. And they immediately whack him.
Yeah.
Because that girl, Tatiana, this is another one of the things that's interesting. Because like you have no explanation for who this woman is. And there's a lot of mystery surrounding her initially, because when she goes and visits Augie, lights her cigarette and tells her, hey, the only way to stop this countdown is to shut down your company. When they go review the security footage, there is no one there talking to Augie. Her cigarette lights seemingly magically.
Yep.
And you wonder at that moment in the TV show, like, did Augie imagine that chick? Is that chick not even there? Well, it turns out, no. The girl is very real and very human, Tatiana. The aliens just have the technology to erase people entirely from security footage. So, like, when she goes and murders Jack Rooney in his home, there is also no footage of her. She's not there. You just see Jack pressed up against the window and suddenly gets his throat slit. And so it's the, what are the, Sophons?
Sophons. Yeah.
The Sophons that the aliens have sent, these supercomputer situations. I think there's two of them on Earth or something.
Yeah, two, yep.
They're deleting the footage, right?
Yes, they're
changing.
They're
just really good video editors. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So that was a part of the show that was like, I mean, there's several elements that you really have to like suspend disbelief and kind of allow yourself to just accept.
Yeah.
That was one of them that I struggled with, because I was just like, okay, this chick can do anything. Did watching this show make you wish you could better understand the universe? Today's episode is brought to you by Schedule 35, the most trusted psilocybin consumer brand in North America. So listen up. Not all drugs are created equal. Psilocybin, for example, when taken thoughtfully at sub-hallucinogenic levels, can sharpen your focus, hone your mental clarity, unleash your creativity, expand your mind, open your heart, and ease your anxiety. While you shouldn't experiment with those shrooms you got from your brother's sketchy friend, Schedule 35 takes a science-backed approach to micro-dosing shrooms. They precisely measure out every dose, they verify the age of every one of their customers, they ship discreetly, and they give you a micro-dosing regimen that allows you to enjoy the benefits of psilocybin without any of the hallucinogenic effects. Research around psilocybin is proven to help with mental health, PTSD, anxiety, focus, and depression. Studies have shown that psilocybin works by creating new neural networks in the brain, which help boost focus, creativity, mood enhancement, and can even help fight addiction. All Schedule 35 products come with guides that make microdosing easy to understand. They're super thorough, so there's no confusion, and you know exactly what you're taking, how much to take, and when to take it. Here at Bolin Media, we're always looking to improve our mental health, and myself and our producer, actually, have personally enjoyed Schedule 35's microdosing plans and been extremely impressed by the results. Schedule 35 ships all across Canada and the U.S. and is the most notable brand currently in the space. All customers will need to be age verified, 19 plus in Canada, 21 plus in the U.S. And again, Schedule 35 is all about accurate doses, discreet shipping, and can be beneficial to those who do or don't suffer from any mental health issues. Get 15% off with the code OCC at schedule35.co. That's 15% off at schedule35.co when you use code OCC.
So for me reading book one was now several months ago as well. So I have the strong desire to go back and read book one to try to fill in some of the gaps that the show leaves you with. But the Sophons in the book, they are very much explained as like, yes, they are kind of, they're omnipresent. They can see and hear all, but they have, and they are also, they also have the way that they communicate with somebody like Mike Evans or with whoever, the kind of the sort of character that's Augie, is all through like text on your eyes.
Okay.
There's no voice box or anything like that they're talking through. So they can mess with your field of vision and create stuff like that, and they can put stuff on like on your film, you know, if you're taking photos, they can change the film. But there's less of like a, they never really talk about like, can they like get into your TV? Can they change security footage? Can they do that type of stuff? Like, their main point is to fuck with science. To like get inside the particle accelerators, throw all the tests off so that science can never develop past the point where it is right now.
Right.
That's the main point of the Sophons.
Right.
They're like, their simultaneous function is that they do create an instant communication loop
with the Santee.
With the Santee that can essentially like see and hear all.
Keeps them in the loop on what's happening on Earth.
Yeah, and it can read stuff on, it can see stuff on paper as well. So it's like that. But they are definitely the biggest kind of like, huh?
How the hell would that work?
Right, and they are also they also open the door for lots and lots of plot holes. And you know, I'll just jump to the last couple episodes. But it's like in one of the last scenes of the show. When Wade is flying back on the plane and the Sofons show up and mess with the plane, are they only doing that in his vision? Are they just creating a vision that they are messing with the plane, or are they actually messing with the plane? Because they can just enter security footage and change it, which brings the question, okay, well, if they really wanted Saul dead, why didn't they just hack the plane and crash the plane?
Well, what they explained to him, like, basically they say in that scene is like, we could kill you right now. We could have killed you a long time ago. We're not going to kill you because you're part of our plan.
Right.
You think you're working against us, but in fact, we already know everything you're going to do.
Yeah.
It's almost like a godlike thing. Like, yeah. You're like, fuck, what?
But
I think it's two-part. You asked, are they messing with the plane or are they messing with his field of vision? I think both.
Yeah.
Because they have, like, the virtual reality Sofon lady show up
right. And
talk to him. But also the plane does seem like it
like
might
the lights
crash.
Are going off,
like,
right?
They literally turned off the power.
Yep.
So, yeah, that was tough.
But so they want Saul dead, right? Like, the, you know, right? Like,
I don't think they do.
Okay. Well, so that's another
Saul. Yes, they do want Saul dead.
Yeah, so why didn't they just crash the plane when Saul was on it?
I don't know.
Right.
Yeah. That's where the plot holes come in.
That's the type of plot hole that the Sofons open up, because they do seemingly have like an infinite amount of power,
but they're not very good at exercising
it. But then they kind of like are picking and choosing their spot. So that part is a little bit. You definitely have to suspend some disbelief, I think, especially on the show. The book, I feel like, does a better job of covering up those plot holes, because it's. You know, you have as many pages as you want to kind of describe it all. But yeah.
The more you're into nerdy science stuff, I think the more you enjoy this show.
Yeah.
Because, like, that was, at no point did I really sit down and try to digest, like, the Sofon concept. Because I was like, this is too ridiculous.
Well,
and
honestly, like, the show only begins to scratch the surface of the science. Like, like book one is fucking dense with science.
Yeah, dude, because if it went any harder than it did the show's first season, no one would watch it.
Right.
It would really limit the audience. Like, you had to dumb this thing down. And even at its dumbed down version, I mean...
Yeah, there's a lot to try to wrap your
head around. I'll say one thing Benioff and Weiss did well was adapt it to, if you wanted to get deep into the science stuff, you could.
Yep.
But if you were like me and hesitant to do that and really just wanted a good story, you could also enjoy it on that level too.
I agree.
Okay with that. As Barrett mentioned, the Santee, the aliens are 400 years away. What they end up revealing, and this is a big scene in the show, probably one of the best and one of the ones that really brought this season together, because like I said, after the first 3-4 episodes, I was kind of flailing. I was like, I don't know if I'm in.
Yeah.
You get the scene where they explain, like, we're 400 years away, but... right now, our technology is far superior to yours. The problem is, y'all's technology is developing exponentially, and in 400 years, you could pass us. So we are attacking all of your scientists and your science in an effort to keep you where you're at so that we can wreck you, essentially. And so we can invade your planet without a problem, right? That was big. I thought they held that moment, withheld that information from us for a little too long, because I was like, okay, this explains a lot of what I was struggling with over the first several episodes, and now you're finally giving me that reason. So that's why they're killing all the scientists, and that's why you're seeing everything you see in the first couple episodes or whatever. But so there's an oil tycoon named Mike Evans who Wenji met when she was in China. He was like an activist there. Mm-hmm. Trying to save
a bird species.
Birds.
Yeah, subspecies.
But then she's like, yo, I made contact with the aliens. And he's like, let's make a fucking cult so hard around this. So they're the two cult leaders. And Mike Evans, present day, is played by the High Sparrow, a.k.a. Jonathan Pryce.
Correct.
He turned an oil tanker into a satellite communication ship to talk with the aliens. Unfortunately, so he gets like a setup that's like, you know, a microphone and a little box. Mm-hmm. And he's able to talk back and forth with them in almost real time. And so he has decided, what I'm going to do with this ability is read them like fairy tales and famous fiction that the humans have written so that they can get to know our species better. Unfortunately, in the process of doing this, he reveals that human beings have a capacity to speak untruths, to lie. And the Santee, these aliens, they don't understand the concept of lying and or fiction. He's like, no, the story's not real. It's just a story, see? And they're like, does not compute.
Yeah.
And then they figure out the lie thing, and they're like, well, if you can lie, we can't trust you. Sorry, buddy, you're out. And they cut their ties with this dude and with the person who originally made contact to them. So, like, she gets arrested because she's no longer under their protection or whatever. Again, the Santee, and especially because they develop a cult around it and call the Santee Lord, becomes like a religious thing. Mm-hmm. An almost like a godlike thing. And like, you know, when Ye gets arrested, she's like, oh, this would only happen if it was part of God's plan, kind of, right? And it turns out they have abandoned them because they found out they could lie. So
that's right.
That was a weird turning point. The whole way that scene unfolded, all of that, the whole setup with the boat and him communicating with them in real time was bizarre.
Yeah. So this is all. So I'm glad that you're bringing up kind of like the first half versus the second half, the video game and the Mike Evans pieces of it versus the second half, which is way more on the staircase project.
Yeah.
We have essentially almost not touched anything. The only episode that goes into book two is the wall facer stuff.
Okay.
The beginning of that.
Yeah.
And Laura had the same take as you, that she thought the second half of the season was better than the first half.
Right.
And the first half of the book, like I've already mentioned, is very dense. It took me much longer to read it than the second one did. And I preferred the second book because the second one just starts humming with like development and plot, and it moves faster and it's more interesting. And it just like, it gives you more to kind of like grab onto. The first one is almost like meditative on stuff. And one of the things that it spends that it spends more time on that the show didn't have time for is why these people created the cult, especially like Ye and Mike. And it's because like they had given up on humanity. They had decided that humanity was no longer fixable. And there are some lines
they give us a little bit
about it, but they spend a lot more time on that, about basically the psychology of like why you would forsake an entire species of your own people.
So my takeaway from the show was basically we have wrecked the earth so hard, right, with climate change and pollution and our just not being good caretakers.
And just being bad to each other, too.
And being bad to each other.
Yeah.
That there is no path forward where we can undo enough of this damage to save ourselves or the planet.
Yeah.
So they find humanity to be irredeemable.
Yeah.
Which, like, obviously, that's a very hard argument to hear made. Like, as a, you know, present day, we deal with this stuff a lot. We talk about this stuff a lot. It's a thing that comes up a lot in terms of how much damage we do to the earth as human beings and how to do less or how to undo the damage we've done. It's a pretty constant topic over the course of my entire 36 years of life so far. And so to hear that there's like an angle where you could see like, well, that we may be too far gone.
Yeah.
Even in presented in fiction. Was tough to digest just because you're like, fuck. I mean, the obvious counter argument to that is like, you should never give up and just abandon your species. And like, it made me curious if there are people who watch the show who identify with Ye and Mike.
Well, and so there's another thing that the show kind of erases that I think, again, helps some of this piece of the plot is that they establish this cult. All of these people have given up on humanity. They've forsaken humanity. But there's a split within the cult. And Mike is on one side and Ye is on the other. There's the redemptionists, which is more where Ye Wenji is, that want the Santee to come in and basically, like, rule, fix us.
Show us the way.
And
share
the earth with us because they're better. They have way more technology. They're a far more advanced civilization. They're basically going to come save the earth and save humanity. And then there are the Adventists who are like, humanity is fucked and evil and we ruined the planet and we don't deserve to live. And
wipe us out.
And they should come wipe us out. And so when they eventually, when the humans get the hard drive, essentially what they learn and what they're able to show Ye is that they have no intention of sharing the Earth with us.
Yeah.
They are going to come kill everybody.
Right.
And take it.
And then
And that's like, that's what kind of flips her a little bit. And so for me, that was an important part of the book because it's like, that makes more sense of how this cult gets developed, right?
Right.
Because that's a lot easier pill to swallow for some of these people joining if in 400 years what they believe is that humanity will be saved by this race, not obliterated by it.
Not ended.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so another confusing element of this thing is at one point the aliens are like, you guys are aware of us now. You're going to try to stop us. We can't let you do that. We're sending another Sophon down to cover the sky. They're just like, basically, they're like, we're not going to keep this a secret anymore. We're going to let the whole planet know that we're coming. They send one of these Sophons down. It unfolds so that the entire sky is covered in Santi fucking, you know, goo or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then they stick a giant eye up there. Like, we're watching you.
Uh-huh.
And the way this unfolds was tough not to kind of laugh at because when it happens, it's a cool scene. You're like, holy shit, people are going to lose their minds. Mm-hmm. But in my mind, I'm like, okay, if this happened present day, right now, utter chaos breaks out in the streets, wars nonstop, nukes are going off, the planet's destroyed before they even get here. This is a terrible, terrible plan.
Yeah, yeah.
In the show, I'm like, fine, I'll get on board with it. And then they almost, that's like episode 6.
Yeah.
There's like 2 more episodes. They never reference the eye in the sky again. They never show people in the street like looking up like, fuck.
They talk about it a couple times. They're like.
But they don't do it justice.
Remember, they put the eye up there and they said we're bugs.
Yeah, yeah. Every screen in the world says you are bugs. Yeah. So like now they now grasp like the concept of metaphor that they did not grasp earlier in the scene. Anyway. That was one of the moments where I was like, they didn't execute this very well in terms of the TV show. And maybe it played better in the book. In fact, I'm confident it did.
This is where I need to go back and read. The you are bugs thing actually ends book one. But I'm like, I'm almost positive that the Sophon does not unfold in the sky on Earth.
Okay.
I don't think it, I'm pretty sure it doesn't do that.
It was
weird. I think they put you are bugs on like, people's eyes or stuff again. I think they use that thing again. The Sophon unfolding happens. They show a little bit of it where they're talking about like how they created the Sophons. I think it's in the video game where she's showing Jin and Jack. And there's like all this. There's like the spaceships, like you know, etching shit into it. There's that. That's in the book, but then I don't think it unfolds on Earth.
Well, that was wacky.
Unless that's in book 3 and I haven't gotten to it yet, which is totally possible given what we know about the show. But I agree with you that didn't like when I think I waited like a week in between episode 6 and 7 and I forgot it happened. It took me like 20 minutes into the episode where there's like an offhand mention of it and I'm like, "Oh, yeah."
They couldn't figure out a way to like show it enough or figure out the balance of like how much of this should be a thing going forward in the season.
I guess if you know that like aliens are coming, it's confirmed.
Yeah.
And you know the Sophons exist because that's now been talked about.
Yeah.
And then like some wild shit happens and then a eyeball pops up in the sky and calls you a bug. You're just like, I guess at that point you're like, well, shit.
People are just like, well, back to work. Like, that would never happen. That's what I mean. People would be killing themselves and each other left and right. It would be total chaos on the planet. And it didn't feel like that's what happened. It felt like people were like, oh, shit. All right, back to my day job. Like, you know, to touch on a couple other things. So the staircase project is this plan. This was another part that I was like, this is so patently fucking ridiculous. I cannot buy in. They're like, we're going to take a human brain and we're going to shoot it out to the aliens because they're on their way here, but we want to send something to them. I couldn't really grasp why there's some kind of like if they're going to spy on us and we're going to spy on them and we're going to do it by sending a human brain. And I was just like, okay, fine, whatever. And then they're like, and you know how we're going to send the brain? We're going to launch it into space. And they're like, well, we can't. we don't have the technology to send things to move fast enough to where it'll get to them in time. And they're like, well, fine. We'll put 200 nuclear weapons in a fucking line, and every time the brain passes one of the nukes, the nuke will go off, and it'll, like, super boost it to the next nuke, and then that nuke will go off. And if we can get that to happen perfectly with absolutely no air using 200 nukes, this plan will work. And the whole time they're presenting the plan, I'm like, there's no fucking way this plan works. This is insane. But then they keep covering it, and there's, like, another episode about it, and I'm like, oh, shit. And then they really start the project, and they're like, the staircase project, we're going to fucking do this. And then they launch the staircase project, and we'll get to whose brain is in it in a second. But I'm like, well, now we're here. It has to work. And it gets past, like, maybe three of the nukes before a fucking strap, like, pops off the thing.
Yeah,
and they're like, whoopsie daisies. And it flings off course. And the project is a failure. And I could not believe that moment. I was just like, okay. Now, I will say this. I'm very, very confident that the Santees somehow get that brain anyway.
Yes, 100%.
There's no way they don't get that brain anyway, but...
Again, I'm not there yet, but I am positive that they get the brain.
Absolutely. Yep. That dude is coming back. So the brain they end up sending
They don't tell this story with Will and with the brain and spend four episodes on the staircase project if this is not coming back.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Yeah. But yeah, that's Will Downing, one of the Oxford Five, who finds out he has cancer. He's going to die. He inherits a bunch of money. Can't remember.
From Jack Rooney.
Oh, yeah. Jack was super rich. He was like a tech bro, but he got offed.
He was a snack bro. Snack tech bro.
Snack slash tech bro. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Will is like, well, fuck it. Send my brain. There's also one of the elements of the story that I hated in the TV show was that, like Jen's boyfriend just happens to be the military dude that they like hire to like run the, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
everybody's way too connected.
It's very connected.
When they start getting into Will having cancer, you're like, okay, clearly this is going to come into play. And then they're like, we need a brain, but it'd be best if that person was already dying. So we're not just killing someone for no reason. And Will's like, yes, that's me. I'm cancer guy that you've been alluding to for two episodes. That was not very well done, but in the end, it's one of those things I was able to write off.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, so I guess they're going to reanimate him, and I got the sense that he might betray humanity, which was kind of, they weren't even...
Well, he says as much.
Which was weird. And Thomas Wade's like, good, do it. We want you to do whatever you're going to do.
He is the man because he's not the man.
Yeah, that was all, that was something. And the last
he's
thing...
He's the man for it, because he's not the man for it.
We don't have a ton more time.
Is he Irish?
I don't know. We don't have a ton more time for this, because we have other shit to cover today, and I still have two fucking ad reads to do, but wall facers, at the end of the season...
You might just have to plug one of those in somewhere. It's been 45 minutes.
I know, what the fuck? you're right, I will. At the end of the season, so you've already heard an ad at this point, it's because we've fixed this retroactively, but at the end of the season, they're like, all right, we're going to... These fuckers can hear and see everything, but they can't read our minds. So we're going to give three people ultimate unquestionable power. We're going to call them wall facers, and they're going to be the problem solvers who go out and figure out how we stop these alien fuckers. And one of them is going to be Saul Durand, who was in the Oxford Five. And once again, you're like, okay, another one of these fucking people. Come on. But... Saul's like, well, I don't want to be a wall facer. And they're just like, yeah, well, that sucks because you are.
Yeah.
And it seems like he might be like a decoy of some kind, perhaps, was my read on the whole thing. Because like they don't give him a reason. They don't even tell him beforehand. The other two wall facers, it's clearly been explained to them what they're going to be. For him, they're like, hey, we're taking you to an event. Here you go. And their explanation, the explanation you're able to draw from it is like, well, the Santi were trying to kill Saul. Mm-hmm. So Saul must be important. Therefore, he is a wall facer.
Yep.
And then the season ends with the detective who's kind of in and out of this thing, Da Shi, played by Benedict Wong, taking Saul and Jen out to a field and being like, look at all the locusts. And they're like, yep, bugs. He's like, those bugs are doing pretty good, aren't they? And we're smarter than bugs, so we should be just fine. Roll credits. And now I will give my review of this season. There were absolutely silly elements to this thing.
Uh-huh.
All in all, they pulled it off enough to where I'm like, I gotta see what happens here. I'm definitely in for season two.
Are they getting a season two?
They have to be. This would be such an enormous waste of time. Let me check though.
I don't think they've been granted one yet.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Damn. It hasn't been granted yet, but it sounds like they're pushing forward full... Here's the quote from Weiss. Quote, "We don't have a second season, but we need to keep pushing forward full steam ahead as if we did." Yeah, just burn that money.
Oh, boy. That's not great.
There's also a headline that says, "Full Body Problem Season 2 has a $160 million problem." So, I don't know. Who knows if we'll see any more of this thing. But yeah. I thought this was okay. It wasn't good. It wasn't great. It wasn't bad. But you really have to like sci-fi, like science shit to get into this. And even then, there are definite problems. I don't, like I said at the top of the pod, crazy complicated, very difficult to adapt. And they gave it their best shot.
Yeah.
But I don't think this is like Benioff and Weiss's return to their former glory.
You don't think this is salvaging their reputation?
I don't think it is, Barrett.
Okay.
I don't think it is.
Again, I had a very hard time evaluating the show on its own merits because I was watching something that I had read be brought to life and something that I really liked and enjoyed reading. And so it was very strange in that way. I was just watching a visual retelling of something that I had already read. And so it's like,
but very out of order compared to what you read.
But very out of order and with a lot of obviously context missing. And so I feel like it was like a B minus maybe in that range. Maybe I'm overshooting that because of my connection to the source material. Maybe it was more like a C plus. But I will say that I hope they get a second season because where they're going with the Wallfacer stuff, and if they can cover a little bit more, honestly, they need to get a little bit more. And I think the book 2 material allows them to get a little bit more philosophical about A, what happens to society here on Earth when something like this happens, because as you've already kind of alluded to, they don't really touch on it. They don't really cover how insane society is going.
Yeah, it's pretty focused on these five people, and then they're, you know, the guy that's the head of the project, Thomas Wade, and the doctor who caused all this. You know, it's pretty focused. Yeah.
And then there's the beginning of it with the at the end there with the Saul and the Ye meeting in the graveyard. And this happens a little bit differently in the book. She doesn't tell a joke. She gives some information to him in a different way. But earlier, she's holding two books. She's holding a book that says, before she goes and meets with him, she's got two books. One is the Fermi Paradox, and the other is a book on game theory. And that's essentially, those are the two things that you essentially need to know. Game theory, I'll just let you look up. But it's basically like, If A happens, then B happens, and then if A1 happens, then B1 happens, and then you go backwards. It gets very complicated. And then the Fermi paradox is basically, to paraphrase it, it's basically like the universe is essentially infinite. The Big Bang happened and exploded into like millions and billions and billions and trillions of galaxies and stars and everything like that. And it's essentially like a statistic impossibility that there is not another civilization out there, and at multiple, most likely. And yet, where are they?
Right.
Why has there never been any contact? But you're right. That's the Fermi paradox. And book two gets way more into like the potential opposite of the Fermi paradox. And I won't go any further than that to cut down on the spoiler talk. But I hope it gets a season two, because I thought by and large the acting was pretty good. I didn't have like any performance problem, or I didn't have any problems with any of the performances.
It was well cast.
It was pretty well cast. And they just had to jam a shitload of context into only 8 episodes. But yeah, it's honestly, like, I'm not sure how well this did. I feel like it got talked about and buzzed about, but the fact that they don't have a second season yet is pretty interesting.
Well, you get to, first of all, the binge model. So it drops all at once. I think people that were really into it were done talking about it in a week, right? Because they just got through it. I mean, even I binged it, and it was like, you know, you've heard my review.
Right.
I didn't think it was the best thing.
Yeah.
It's insanely complex and very high level, and you definitely have to be working with at least a decent education to watch this show and have a feel for what's happening.
Well, also listening to you describe some of this stuff, it requires a lot of this sounds silly. It looks silly on TV,
You know what I mean?
The video game part in particular, there were pieces of it where I was like, I can't tell if they skimped on budget here or they wanted it to look bad, but this is not the best CGI and it's not even close.
I think it was a miss. You probably couldn't have just like clipped the video game stuff from the show. It's probably too integral to the text.
But they spent a lot of time in there,
but
man.
But they did, and I think that I do agree that that was kind of a miss.
Yeah, and you know, like I said, I think they tried their best with this thing, but like, my God. It was complicated, and we'll see. I mean, this will be one of the great L's in Netflix history if they don't have a season two, because that was a lot of money a lot of talent, and Benioff and Weiss.
Dude, we need a season two to get more Game of Thrones cast. You know, they
cycling through this thing. Yeah, like I said, I'll watch it if it comes out. I don't know that it will. Are you looking for more confidence when it's time to make pop pop in the bedroom? Good news, fellow sex haver. Today's episode is sponsored by Blue Chew. Aging television watcher. Remember the days when you were always ready to go? Now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence when it's time for some passionate pillowing. Listen up, BlueChew.com. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra, Cialis, and Levitra, but in chewable tablets and at a fraction of the cost. You can take them anytime, day or night, so you can plan ahead or be ready whenever an opportunity arises. The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. The best part? It's all done online, so no visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, and no waiting in line at the pharmacy. Blue Chew's tablets are made in the USA and prepared and shipped direct to your door in a discreet package. I've used Blue Chew's tablets several times, and let me tell you, they work. If you're looking for more confidence, if you're looking to make a lasting impression, if you're in the market for the best pop-pop of your life, Blue Chew could be the answer for you, too. Blue Chew wants to help you have better sex. Discover your options at BlueChew.com. Chew it and do it. And we've got a special deal for the Clam Fam. Try Blue Chew free when you use our promo code OCC at checkout. Just pay $5 in shipping. That's BlueChew.com. Promo code OCC to receive your first month free. Visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring the podcast. The other stuff, just very, very quickly, the Jinx part two.
Yes, I have not watched Sunday's episode.
I have. We're three episodes deep at this point.
I'm two in.
You know how many they're going to be? Six?
Yeah, I think it's five or six.
Pretty fun. It's basically if you watch the Jinx, which was what year was that, dude?
2014, I believe. Yeah, 2014. It's 10 years ago.
2015. February 8th, 2015 was the debut.
Okay.
That one had six episodes. Was one of the craziest true crime documentaries ever made because in the final episode...
For me, it was the best.
It was the best one ever made.
And it did. I feel like it started this whole thing.
Well, you remember like listening to Serial,
the
podcast?
It was that and Serial. It was basically that
and Serial. You're like, oh, shit. This is crazy, but then like nothing really ever comes of it during the original run of Serial.
Yes.
Nothing ever comes of it. He's still in prison. And you're like, oh, what the fuck? This feels like kind of a waste of time. The Jinx was the total opposite to where you get to the final, literally the final screen of the fucking documentary. And he admits to the crime. Like he accidentally admits to the crime into a hot microphone. The entire investigation is sparked back up. And he ends up in prison.
Yeah.
And so for those of us that followed that, it was an insane ride.
It was truly amazing. Yeah.
I didn't closely follow what happened with Robert Durst, though. This is what part two is doing. The Jinx part two is essentially, okay, what happened as a result of part one? It starts off with him getting arrested and going to prison and then the trial. And I have no clue where we're going with this thing.
It's Bob.
Bob, one of the weirdest dudes that has ever walked the face of the earth.
Truly. And the man has like snake eyes. He's got demon eyes.
Yeah, but he also has a lot of ticks and twitches.
He's got no white in his eyes.
Yeah.
It's just big, like, this man is truly like otherworldly.
Dude, a lot of times they're like, you look at Bob and you don't think this is a killer. No. And I'm like, I completely disagree. I completely disagree. He looks fucking super off base. Like, I get what they're saying. He's old at this point, especially in part two. He's old and frail.
Yeah.
And he's a little white dude. And you're just like, I don't know. This old grandpa couldn't hurt anybody. But something about his eyes, though, to your point, I'm like, no, fuck that. I don't trust this dude.
Let me ask you a question. I've not watched episode three, but it doesn't really have to do with the whole Jinx. You should be watching the Jinx part two. And if you never saw the Jinx part one,
go watch it.
Go watch it. Yeah. It's like, if you've ever enjoyed anything true crime, like, I think this will blow your socks
off. Oh, absolutely. And this is something that in the next few weeks, when it wraps up, we will definitely talk about it on some level. So,
why do you think he never committed any other murders?
Because I don't think
he's basically done after 2001.
You know how a lot of killers are like, they need it.
Yeah.
Like, it's like they get addicted to it. They need to feel like taking the life from somebody, and like the experience becomes this thing that they crave.
Yeah.
He's not one of those. He's, if you back me into a corner, I will fucking kill my way out.
Yeah. Yeah.
He gets backed into a corner thrice, therefore three people die. You know what I mean? Like,
okay.
I think if it kept
that
happening, he would keep killing, but he's not killing because he enjoys it. He's killing because it's self-preservation.
Yeah.
That was it. Now, the original slang, the one that, you know, his first, his wife, that one I'm a little more confused about.
Yep.
I think they're going to start to get into that more in season two. Like, why did he kill his wife? The original crime here that you know, started all this with Robert Durst. But this thing is fantastic. It's really well done. It's super fascinating. You get this inside look into, like, this very deranged man and in his inner circle in part two. Other than that, I finished Baby Reindeer, also on Netflix, similar to Three Body Problem. Look, this thing, so it's Richard Gadd is this British comedian who wrote this and created it based on his real experience being stalked by a middle-aged woman.
Okay.
So it's rooted in reality. Episode one starts and it's like, this is a true story. You get a few episodes in, and this is my review of it quickly.
Have you finished it?
No spoilers. Yeah, I'm done. Okay. You get a few episodes in, and you're like, wow, this is really wacky, but this guy is making some super poor decisions in terms of, like, he's got this stalker, and he becomes aware of her, but he's almost encouraging her. And you're just like, what the fuck? The back half of the season gets into why. And that was the thing that made Baby Reindeer really, really good. I think it was a great show. It is not for everybody. It is very dark and it at times traumatizing. Very triggering for people who have been like victims of sexual assault, for an example. But it gives you insight. Like, as a human being who becomes aware of stories and true crime and all these things, we often ask ourselves, like, why would you do that? And this gives you insight into, like, for everything that happens, there's a reason. For every decision people make, there's a thing that put something in their brain that made them say, this is the way I have to go, or this is why I'm going to go this way. And this gives you a ton of insight into human beings' trauma, you know, things that we don't think about a whole lot, like why you would stalk somebody, why you would sort of like it if someone stalked you, like why you would seek fame and fortune, why you would do drugs with someone you don't know that well, like all these questions that are seemingly like I said, first few episodes you're watching going, this guy is a moron.
Mm-hmm.
By the end of the season, you're like, oh shit, he was just like a super messed up dude. But it's a thrilling ride. Most of the episodes are under a half hour long, except for episode four, which throws you.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
All of a sudden, the fourth episode's like 45 minutes of fucking torture porn, but
that makes way more sense as to how this blew up so fast over a weekend.
Very, very bingeable.
I assumed these were all like an hour long.
Nah, man. And every episode ends and you're like, okay, I gotta know what happens next. This is insane. And because it's based on a true story, that gives you, you know, it gives it even more juice.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, that has caused a lot of issues after the fact because this blew up worldwide, not just in the States. And people were trying to find the real stalker, find some of the other real characters in the show.
Okay.
And it's caused people to be harassed, receive death threats. The dude who created it, Richard Gadd, has had to come out on social media and be like, please stop trying to figure out who the characters are. You're getting me in trouble. And it's caused this big hubbub around, like, should you take reality and turn it into fiction inspired by reality, or is that dangerous? Blah, blah, blah. There's all these conversations around it. That, all that being said, Baby Reindeer, after I sat with it for a while, was amazing. It's just like I said, it's not for everybody. It's definitely something you need a chaser for.
Yeah.
You cannot watch this and go straight to sleep. Only other thing I wanted to touch, and we can leave it for next week if you want, is The Sympathizer.
Let's leave it for next week. Have you watched any of it yet?
No.
Okay.
No.
Yeah, maybe you get a chance to see some, and then we'll be able to have a little bit better conversation about it. I've watched two. It's kind of my new show that I've picked up here pre-House of the Dragon. And all I'll say for now is that I think it's quite good and I like it.
Okay, cool.
So
and this is Robert Downey Jr.
This is Robert Downey Jr.
on HBO.
On HBO. It's a period piece. It's post-Vietnam War. So if you like kind of like spycraft, if you like period stuff, if you like war history, it's got kind of a mixture of all of that, and then Robert Downey Jr. is playing four different characters, all of whom are kind of like zany. Like, he's chewing a lot of scenery.
Dear God.
Yeah. He's doing a lot. He's doing the most. But so far, it's paying off. So check out The Sympathizer, and we can talk about that in the next couple
weeks. Yeah, we can talk about that in the next couple weeks. We'll also talk about, I want to get your review of Anyone But You.
Yes, yeah,
that you watched with Glenn Powell and Sydney Sweeney.
And the Sweens.
And then my last thing for today, the Jon Snow spinoff show. They're not moving forward.
Okay, all right.
I forgot to bring this up a couple weeks ago, but their reason was, and I'm being serious, we couldn't come up with a good story. Which I thought was step one.
Yeah.
In the process, but that really concerns me, that they're like, oh, fuck it, we have to package up a Jon Snow offshoot for Kit Harington.
He came and said he wanted to do it.
Yeah, but shouldn't he have had the story then? Or somebody should have had a story. You have to have the story first. Coming with the concept, and then what did they do? Just open it up? Like, all right, everybody go and write.
Yes.
And if somebody can bring us a good thing.
In the world of IP, right? Kit Harington comes up and he's like, hey, just saying, I'll be down
John
to reprise
Snow.
The role and do like an at-the-wall post-Game of Thrones, like Jon Snow show. And the execs are like, well, yeah, we have to chase that down.
Yeah.
And so they probably put like four writers on it. They're like, hey, go write a spec script. And then they come back and like see what these people got.
And nobody had anything good. I mean, just maybe keep it completely under wraps then until you get to the point where you've got this. You know what I mean? Because it's just like they keep looking like slapdicks here.
Yeah.
They're like, they've canceled one HBO thing, one Game of Thrones spinoff that they had going. One has successfully made it to the screen in House of the Dragon. They announced the Jon Snow thing was a possibility. Now that's off the table. I wish they would play it a little closer to the chest.
Yeah. Warner Brothers, by and large, has kind of, I don't know, they kind of shit the bed when it comes to their big tentpole pre-existing IP. Like, they've not done anything great with the Harry Potter franchise.
No, but they are developing a TV show now.
Yes, to redo the books.
Which will be interesting.
Which they better nail.
That's going to be interesting, for sure.
And the Game of Thrones, I mean, like, you know, we'll see with how House of the Dragon season 2 pans out. But, like, yeah, the machinations of what's going on behind the scenes has not been clean. That's for sure.
It doesn't seem like a very tightly run ship at the moment. it seems more like a gaming ship.
Yeah. Yes.
All right, that'll do it for today's show. Thank you all for being with us and listening to us discuss all the craziness that we got into today. Remember, we are available on all the major podcast platforms, but also in full video on youtube.com/@oystersclamscockles for your viewing pleasure. Please subscribe on YouTube. Throw us a like. Leave us a comment if you're there. Do those three things right now, please. Shout out to everybody watching on YouTube. We appreciate you. For more from me, check out the Ross Bolin podcast, wherever podcasts are played. If you're a Houston sports fan, check out Banging the Can. If you're an F1 fan, check out Formula Bone. Mr. Dudley, where can the people follow you on social media to keep up with
X and Instagram X. At Barrett Dudley.
I'm at WR Bolin on both. Go to bolinmedia.com/shop to grab yourself some merch. Remember, House of the Dragon season 2 premiere, June 16th. We are your go-to companion podcast for that. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. Thank you for being here today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. We'll see you all on Patreon later this week. Patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. Until next time,
the King in the North.